Good afternoon, New York, and the rest of our listeners around the globe. My name is June Stoyer, and I'm the host of the Organic View Radio Show. Our podcast is available on iTunes, Zune, and you can also visit our website, which is www.theorganicview.com. If you have any questions or would like to connect with us, you can simply post a question on our wall on Facebook, send us a tweet to @TheOrganicView, or contact me directly at June Stoyer on Twitter. If you'd like to be on the show or would like to find out about sponsorship opportunities, please contact us at questions@TheOrganicView.com. Today's show is sponsored by Eden Foods, one of the most trusted names in certified organic clean foods. Listeners of the Organic View Radio Show can receive 20% off any regularly priced items, excluding cases. Simply enter the coupon code ORGVIEW when prompted during checkout. That's ORGVIEW. For more special offers, please visit our website at www.organicview.com. Today's topic, lionaid.org. Where have all the lions gone? Over the past 50 years, Africa's lion populations have plummeted from over 200,000 individuals back into the 1960s to fewer than 20,000 today. This is a shocking number considering the geographical size of Africa and the fact that the greatest number of remaining lion populations are very small, scattered throughout the continent, and remain highly vulnerable. There have been many conservation foundations working to improve the lot of the African lion, but sadly, to date, the declines have not abated. In fact, the rate of decline in lion numbers is actually accelerating. Ghana is probably the latest African country added to the long list that have lost all of their lions, and Kenya and Uganda predict local extinctions in the next 10 years. Lions are actually a major trophy for hunters. Despite their well-documented decline, there is still a considerable trophy hunting effort. Since the last published decline in lion numbers on the continent were made public back in 2002 to 2004, over 4,400 lions, and that's not a lot, have been exported as trophies. I mean, you're talking about a large portion of the lion population when there's such a minimal population left. So 4,400 lions, I mean, it may as well be the whole population. I mean, and the thing is that this is used basically as a method for birth control for the lions. I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous. And that's why the trophies are largely male lions. And it just is amazing that there are certain organizations that actually encourage lion hunting because of this reason. I mean, this is a particular animal that is rapidly losing its presence on the face of the earth. And there are actually organizations that are promoting this and encouraging this to happen. Now, there's an organization called lionaid.org, which is a nonprofit organization that's dedicated to the conservation and preservation of lions. Their mission is to create awareness about the huge decline of the lion population and work with government officials and other organizations to cease the legal hunting of these animals. So today, I'd like to introduce and welcome the founder of lionaid.org, Dr. Peter Catt, and also Christine McSween. So good afternoon, folks, and actually good evening, and welcome to the Organic View.
Good evening.
Hi, June. Lovely to be on your show. Oh, and hopefully what we can do tonight in the UK and the afternoon for you is to actually explain to people what we're doing, why we're doing it, and tell people why lions are important.
Well, I think anybody who's ever seen any movie, I mean, if you look at the trademark signatures of so many different corporations, so many movies, I mean, the lion has always been a representation of something very strong.
the lion for people that are born under the sign of not Cancer, the one after that.
Leo.
Thank you. There you go. Leo the lion. My brother's birthday is coming up, and actually, many years ago, I bought him a ring that had a lion's head on it, as just something that was, you know, he's not really into the zodiac or anything like that, but it was just because, you know, he's a big guy and, you know, very strong and muscular and powerful, and it just was kind of fitting that as a birthday present, I bought him this gigantic lion's head ring. So, you know, the lion is just such a symbol of strength in not only our culture, but in many cultures, and has been a symbol of strength throughout the ages. And it's just disturbing that there are groups out there that, especially in this day and age where there's so much awareness about different things that are going on with the planet, how certain animals are really vital to keeping a balanced ecosystem. I mean, we've seen it with the gray wolves. We've seen it with so many different animals. We are basically wiping out creatures that are predators that are necessary in order to keep the balance, or in order to keep the ecosystem balanced. And, you know, it just amazes me at how many animals are added to the endangered species list, and the fact that the lions have not been, it's absolutely ridiculous. So,
well, June, let me just say this. In the United States, something like 18% of all the species in the United States are currently listed as critically endangered. Now, what that means is that we're not paying attention. We're not paying attention to our environment. We're not paying attention to our heritage in terms of biodiversity. People are paying lip service to conservation of species because in my mind, what we're doing is we're saying the earth is ours and it doesn't belong to anybody else. And I think that That's something that we all need to revise and think about very carefully, because what we are saying is that it doesn't matter what goes extinct. If some little salamander or if some frog or if some freshwater mollusk becomes extinct in the United States, it doesn't really matter. But in the overall view of what we are doing and our impact on the world, I think that we must revise our attitudes very, very seriously. And, you know, we have been criticized for always looking at the sort of charismatic species. You know, we're concerned about the survival of rhinos and pandas and orangutans and gorillas and tigers and lions, but we're not paying attention to the less charismatic species, if you want to put it that way. But I think that overall, we have a responsibility, thinking people have a responsibility towards overall conservation of this planet and overall conservation of species. Now, where we have gone wrong is to define biodiversity as being important for us. Just think about that for a second. What we have said is that what we want is for our grandchildren to be able to see a lion, to be able to see a panda, to be able to see a gorilla. Now, the gorillas and the pandas and the lions don't really give very much about our grandchildren's needs. It is the species that need to be conserved without that sort of human concept of what is important. You understand what I'm saying?
Yes. Now,
Now
go ahead.
If if we always evaluate what is important on the earth in terms of our human perceptions, then we're on the wrong track. But that is always what happens. Biodiversity, animals, plants are always evaluated in terms of their importance to us. And what we need to do is we need to create or accept or go on to a much more detailed idea about what is important, not to us, but what is important to biodiversity. You know, we as a species, we're only about 200,000 years old. In terms of the animals and the plants and the amphibians and the frogs, you know, we've got species living on this earth. For example, the coelacanth, it's a fish, okay? This fish has been around for millions and millions and millions of years. We are a flash in the pan in terms of humans, and we dictate what happens on Earth and what happens in terms of what we think is important to conserve. That must stop.
And unfortunately, this is not just with... this is not something that has come upon our culture overnight. This has been going on for centuries. I mean, even back to the days of the Bible, where with snakes, for example, snakes are always associated with something that's evil, something that's bad. So what do human beings do when they see a snake? They immediately want to kill it. But the bottom line is that snakes play a very vital role in the environment. Snakes eat bugs. Snakes eat, you know, they do all sorts of things that are really important as far as nature is concerned. But because we have been taught to look at them as evil creatures, as creatures that don't serve a purpose other than, you know, bad things, then we immediately want to destroy them. Now, Peter, can you talk about your research so that our audience can have a better understanding of all the things that you've studied and how you came about to actually founding Lionaid?
Well, look, I mean, it's not that I particularly fell in love with lions or anything like that, but I've been working on wildlife conservation issues in Africa for about the last 20 years. I started out in Kenya, worked there for 10 years, and then went to Botswana and worked on lion conservation issues and wildlife conservation issues for the next 12 years. But what you get from looking at these conservation issues is that we are divorced from a real conservation ethic. What we are doing in terms of our how we evaluate the importance of wildlife is through tourism and it's through trophy hunting. And we'll come back to the trophy hunting issue, I hope, because that's a very important one. But I think that what we need to do, all of us, is to really take a very careful look at what we want on this planet. Do we want only humans and rats and cockroaches, or do we want biodiversity?
Yeah, that's a very important question. But unfortunately, one of the biggest issues is that people are also driven by money. I mean, it's disturbing that when it comes to coral is something that is used in high-end fashion, and coral is a living fish. It's a fish that feels pain because people don't recognize that because coral does not speak the language that we do. We automatically assume that because it doesn't communicate with us that it does not feel pain. And that's a big problem that human beings have. And that's something that, you know, as we are evolving and as we are reconnecting with nature, we're beginning to recognize the fact that we are not the only beings on this earth. There is a whole world full of them, and we need to learn how to coexist peacefully with them, because it's not our earth to just destroy for ourselves. We're very selfish. We're very focus on only our needs, and that has been the problem. That has been why there have been so many problems, because it's all about what our needs are. And, you know, once again, with the lion issue, this is a perfect example.
Well, I think you're right, June, because, you know, what we tend to do is we evaluate what is important to us, and so therefore what is important to us to conserve. Now, what we can do with lions, for example, is to say, yes, they are very important to us. They're important to us in terms of culture. They're important to us in terms of maintaining healthy ecosystems and making sure that if we have lions in an ecosystem, that presence of those animals ensures that the you know, it's sort of like the wolves in Yellowstone, okay? Nobody really knew the value of a top predator in an ecosystem until they were reintroduced into Yellowstone. Yellowstone Park went through a tremendous revolution in terms of its habitats, in terms of the species that became present there. You know, you had everything was reestablished back to where it supposedly was, you know, years and years ago before the wolves were all killed. But when the wolves came back, we had a reestablishment of a lot of species, including beavers, birds, plants, all because of the wolves being reestablished and preying on the elk that were doing all the damage to the ecosystem. Mm. So a balanced ecosystem needs top predators. And if you remove lions from that equation in Africa, then you are left with a depauperate ecosystem, and you're left with something where a lot of species are not being preyed upon. For example, lions prey upon the big-bodied species, including elephants, hippos, giraffes, zebras, buffaloes. And if you take a lion out of that equation, those large-bodied herbivores will come to dominate in an ecosystem where there is no predation on them. Same thing as what happened in Yellowstone. The elk took over the entire ecosystem. Now, if you have a situation like that, then what you have is a tremendous number of changes that take place. The smaller predators will take over, and the large-bodied herbivores will take over to the extent that you don't have smaller herbivores, and that will completely change the whole aspect of what we think of as a balanced ecosystem in Africa. So lions are not only important in terms of, you know, what we think as being a charismatic species, but in terms of their contribution to an overall balanced ecosystem. That's very, very important. Now, the other thing that lions do is, of course, they prey on a number of species, and unfortunately in Africa what happens is that with the growing human population in Africa, we have a lot of species that are not native. In other words, humans have introduced cows, goats, sheep, donkeys, horses, all of which are preyed upon by lions when their natural prey has been removed from their normal habitats. Human encroachment on lion habitats in Africa is probably the largest reason why we don't have 200,000 lions anymore. Mm. We will probably never have 200,000 lions in Africa again because of growing human populations. It's the same thing in the United States. We will never have the number of cougars, mountain lions, bears, wolves that were present in the United States 100 years ago, because human populations have grown. The impact of human populations on habitats, on wildlife habitats, is enormous. So what we're left with is a situation where we need to very carefully say, right, humans have a role to play, obviously, in the landscape of Africa. You can't get away from that. Humans and their livestock have a role to play in the environment in Africa. But there need to be places where lions are protected and left alone.
And with these areas where the lions need to be protected and left alone, I mean, unless you have some type of law, how can that be enforced?
Well, you know, June, there's a lot of protected areas in Africa. Some countries have over 20% of their land area devoted to national parks, game reserves, and things like that, where lions can be protected. The problem is that a lot of organizations, a lot of conservation organizations, are attempting to say, okay, people can actually live with lions. Now, I don't particularly agree with that, but that's my personal opinion. Mm. Where the lion populations in the future are going to be able to survive is in protected areas where they're not surrounded by humans, where they're not surrounded by cattle, and where they have a potential to be able to thrive and build up their numbers. Now, what you have to accept in Africa is that a lot of countries there have gone through tremendous upheavals. In other words, there have been civil wars, there have been problems in terms of government protecting those areas that have been designated as national parks because nobody goes there, and you know, the finances for the national parks are not in place. And so what is happening these days is that with increasing stability, political stability in Africa, what we're seeing is that a lot of countries that have lost lions are now wanting to have them back again. And those include nations in West Africa, in Central Africa, in Southern Africa, in Eastern Africa, you name it. There's a lot of areas in Africa that are perfectly suitable for lions, and now lions need to be reintroduced into those areas, and that is what we are hoping that will take place in the future. But in the meantime, what we're trying to do is we're trying to say, all the factors that are causing mortality for lions that we can actually do something about need to be removed. In other words, what we cannot do is remove the factors of mortality that include human conflict and human livestock conflict. Those, you can't have lions living with people, period. What we can do is we can say that where lions can live need to be protected, and the African countries need to decide how many lions they want in their countries, where they can protect them, and then enforce that very strictly. So one of the factors that we can remove in terms of lion mortality is lion trophy hunting. And lion trophy hunting, you know, a lot of people, when you mention the fact that lions are still trophy hunting, people are absolutely amazed because they think that this went out in the days of Teddy Roosevelt and people like Karen Blixen. You know, you saw that movie probably with Robert Redford and what was her name? Meryl Streep, right? Mm-hmm. Out mm-hmm. of Africa.
Yeah.
Right? People think that trophy hunting of those of lions and a lot of other animals went out in those days. But it is still there. It still goes on. There's a lot of people that are very interested and spend a lot of money trophy hunting animals in Africa.
Well, it's just like with it's just like with the ivory from elephants. I remember when I was very little, there was a whole big thing. I remember the piano keys used to be made from ivory. And then they had a ban on ivory, and you could not slaughter an elephant for its husks. And that's basically what they would that's basically what they were doing. And then once they outlawed it, you know, once you make it illegal, then, you know, the demand goes away.
Well, you know, the demand for ivory is still huge. You know, there's a lot of countries, like, for example, China and Japan and Taiwan and Vietnam, that really would like to import a lot of ivory. And there are still a lot of ivory shipments, illegal ivory shipments, that are intercepted, and for example, in Hong Kong, and they're traced back to Tanzania. So the ivory trade has been outlawed in terms of imports, but it is still something that is really attractive to a lot of people, so there's a lot of smuggling. It's the same thing with rhino horn. Rhino horns are now extremely attractive to a lot of countries in Asia. Vietnam and China want to import lots and lots of rhino horns, because they are seen as being traditional medicine remedies. Now, we all know about these traditional medicines in terms of, you know, how well they work or how well they don't work. But there's a lot of people in China and in Vietnam and places like that that think that rhino horn is going to be the cure and the end all for fever, for rheumatism. There's some myth that, you know, rhino horn is going to be the equivalent of Viagra, but that's not true. But anyway, there still remains a tremendous import market or potential import market into those countries that don't have import controls. Now, the ivory issue that you mentioned was stopped by countries saying, we don't want to import ivory anymore. It was, and I need to be really clear about this, it was an import ban that stopped the ivory trading. It wasn't an export ban by the exporting countries that stopped the ivory trading. In other words, a lot of African countries still want, to this day, to export the ivory. It's an import ban that stopped the ivory trading. And that is what we are trying to achieve with Alliance. Because if you have something like 650 male lions being exported from Africa per year against a population of something like 20, 25,000 lions, it just doesn't work anymore. It is not sustainable. It is what we have described as a mining activity. A mining activity is something that, you know, you take the resources away and you can never replace them again. So what we have said is that that export level of 650 male lions per year to various countries, the USA being one of the ones that is major, because the USA imports about 60% of all the trophies that are shot in Africa.
Wow, that is a very large.
Is not going to be sustainable.
That's a very large figure. Why is it that large for the United States?
Well, because the United States has a lot of people who have the financial ability to go to Africa and hunt a lion. Now, you have to understand that hunting a lion in Africa costs a lot of money. There are estimates of various countries that say that if you want to go to Africa and hunt a lion, it it's going to cost you in terms of just your being there, okay, and hunting a lion will cost you at least $30,000 or $40,000. That's not including your airfare. That's not including the cost of exporting that trophy. That's not the taxidermy fee. So what you're looking at is, you know, by the time you've gone to Africa and you've got that lion trophy mounted and stuffed in your house, you're looking at something like $100,000. Now, there's not many people in the world who can afford that, but the people who can largely come from the United States.
Wow. That's a big eye-opener.
Now, what happens is that there's a lot of people in the United States who say that this should be continued. Because what we are doing, and, you know, one organization in the United States that actually lobbies very strongly for continued lion hunting is the Safari Club International. Now, the Safari Club International is an organization that is very, very powerful. For example, let me give you some figures here. The Safari Club International has something like 30,000 or 40,000 members, but that's not a large number because actually the people who want to do trophy hunting are not very numerous, but they are very influential. When Botswana in 2002 decided to have a trophy hunting moratorium, the president of Botswana got a letter written by Norman Schwarzkopf. You remember him, Storming Norman from the
course.
First Europe? Okay.
Yes.
The second signatory was George Bush Sr. And the third signatory was Dan Quayle. Do you remember him?
How can we forget?
The vice president? Now, that gives you an indication of who is actually moving and shaking within that Safari Club International organization. They include CEOs of major organizations, major companies, and they include some very, very influential people. These are people who have money to throw around. And throw around is exactly what they do. They influence governments. They influence the international organizations that are supposed to be monitoring the impact of trade on species. They influence even conferences and symposia. They influence scientists to produce reports that are in their favor. I mean, these guys are all over the place. What they want you to believe is that hunting, trophy hunting, is good for the species. Now, what they say very clearly, and this is a mantra, okay? This is something that every trophy hunter wakes up in the morning and repeats to himself. And the mantra is, trophy hunting benefits the conservation of the species. That's number one. Number two is they say trophy hunting benefits the African communities. That's number two. Number three, trophy hunting gives value to wildlife. And therefore, if wildlife has value, the communities will appreciate it and protect it in Africa. And number four, the presence of trophy hunting prevents communities and all these naughty people in Africa from poaching wildlife. Those are the four things that underpin the rationale for trophy hunters to go out and shoot animals in Africa. Now, unfortunately, trophy hunting in Africa does not benefit the conservation of any species. In fact, lion numbers in areas where there has been trophy hunting have declined tremendously. if you shoot 650 animals per year, what you have to do is you have to shoot younger and younger and younger animals in terms of your trophies. There are hunters who shoot lions that are about 2 or 3 years old. The taxidermist will make it look really nice because what they do is they stick a mane on there. Okay, it's like a wig. So you can mount it on your wall and you can say, okay, I came back from Africa with this beautiful full-maned lion. Actually, you shot a lion that is 2 years old that doesn't have a mane, or you shoot a lion that is 3 years old and doesn't have a mane, or you shoot a lion that's 4 years old and doesn't have a mane, okay? So trophy hunting of lions doesn't conserve the species at all. They say that trophy hunting benefits the communities. It doesn't benefit the communities. All the communities that have so far signed up their land to trophy hunting companies, in other words, what they do is they make some kind of deal and they say, okay, as a community, we have all this land available to us and we have all this wildlife that is living on our land. And what we're going to do now is we're going to make a deal with a trophy hunting company and we're going to sign this land over to them. And we expect benefits from this. It doesn't work. Because a lot of places, for example, Tanzania, has set aside, now get this, they have set aside 26% of the land in Tanzania for trophy hunting activities.
Wow.
Can you imagine what that would be in terms of the United States? That's more than a quarter of the United States. So let's say the United States sets aside the whole of the East Coast for trophy hunting. That's what Tanzania has done. The benefit for Tanzania is 0.25% in terms of its gross domestic product that it earns from trophy hunting. 26% of the land has been set aside to earn 0.25% of its gross domestic product. How does that work? Is that an activity that needs to be considered and sustained by Tanzania? I don't think so.
But yet Tanzania encourages it. So what exactly can you do about it? I mean, you're in Europe. You know, how do you even get the government to cooperate when the government sees this as, you know, just another day in business?
Hi, June. This is Christine here.
Hi,
I mean, listening to what Peter has been saying. As you can hear, he's very passionate about what he does, and I am too. And just to recap a little bit, I went out to Africa and on a photographic safari back in the early 2000s, 2001, I think it was, and I saw the lions in the wild, and I was very moved by the closeness of a wild lion. For all those of you that have had that privilege, there is something that you won't ever forget, to see a lion in the wild. And then I had one of those occasions when I just bumped into somebody in a bar, and it turned out to be Peter, and I found out all that you're hearing from him, what's happening to lions, and I saw all the wonderful work that he was doing out there in Botswana trying to conserve lions, and that's when I came back to the UK and I formed Lion Aid, because I felt that somebody had to do something, and I felt that Peter needed a voice for the wonderful work that he does. So there's a little history of how Lion Aid was formed in the first place. So Peter and I teamed up forces, and you've heard all the things that you've had to say. So to come on to your question now of how did we get the UK government involved, well, we started a campaign in March 2010 when we went around the UK and we identified all these wonderful lion monuments that exist in the cities here. And I contacted all the cities and said, may we come along one day with a big black shroud and cover these lions up with a black cloth just for the day and call it Where Have All the Lions Gone, so that it really brought an awareness home to people that we did have a big problem here and people needed to pay attention. As a result of that campaign, one of the places we went was the Isle of Wight, and we met an MP there called Andrew Turner, who was the MP for the Isle of Wight. He listened to what Peter had to say, and he listened to what I had to say, and he said, look, I want to help you guys. I think what you're doing is wonderful, and you need a voice. And we kept in touch with him, and it took him several months, but he eventually achieved an adjournment debate in the UK Parliament, and that happened in November 2010. And when that debate came along, Peter wrote the speech for the debate. It was changed a little bit by Andrew, but basically it was Peter's speech that went forward. I went along to the chamber, listened to this debate, and that's how we got the politicians involved. We now have some 27 UK MPs involved. We have 3 MEPs involved. We now have 2 questions tabled to the European Parliament about lions. And if we're successful in this mission, then it will give us a very good platform to move into the US administration and talk to them and to talk to CITES about their position regarding lions, because at the moment they are not listening. And
why,
if you can get Europe, go on.
Why aren't they listening is the question. Is it because of the influential wealthy people that just want to see this thing stifled because it's something that they view to be more or less a form of pleasure in its own sick way?
Yes, it is. And the other thing that happens is that the Safari Club International and the various bodies that work with it have got very deep pockets, and they are very, very good at political lobbying. And because of that, the science is not listened to. Here in Europe, we are hopeful, and you know the results remain to be seen, but we have got good indications that scientific evidence is much more considered when they make decisions about lion conservation or about conservation of any species. And so we are finding that we're getting some doors opening to us. Yet again tomorrow, we are meeting another minister in Westminster who wants to talk to us about this problem with lions, and we are very encouraged by the open ears that are starting to come our way talking about lion conservation, and we will hand to them the hard science, because if you look beyond the political lobbying and you look at the hard science of what is happening to the African lion, then it's just, there is no question that lion trophy hunting has to stop. I mean, it's just as black and white as that.
Now, from what I understand...
June,
yeah, go ahead, Peter.
June, there has been a... since we started this political lobbying here in the UK and indeed in the European Union, there has been a follow-on in the United States initiated by the Humane Society of the U.S., by the International Foundation for Animal Welfare, and by Born Free USA, to put lions on the U.S. Endangered Species Act. Now, if that goes through, then there will be no more trophy imports of lions into the U.S. For example, the cheetah has also been declared as an endangered species by the USA, and it has now reached a point where trophy hunters who come from the United States and want to hunt cheetahs in Africa are not allowed to bring those trophies back home again. So that pretty much stifles the will of any trophy hunter to go out to Africa from the U.S. and hunt a cheetah. The problem with the United States, and I'm sorry to say this, but the problem with the United States is that this proposal by those various conservation organizations has been put to the Secretary of the Interior, Ken Salazar. Now, Ken Salazar has not been very active in terms of adding species to the U.S. endangered species list.
Well, I think if anything, they've been pretty active with taking animals off the endangered species list, as has been demonstrated by some of my previous guests, especially from the folks at defenders.org that have been talking about certain species where it's amazing that these are animals that are part of American history. They're about to be completely wiped out, and because of certain special interest groups, it's being encouraged because these groups have no need for these animals and view them to be a threat to their bottom line, and that's what it all boils down to.
Well, exactly. And, you know, the wolf is now being hunted again in a lot of places in the United States. You know, wolves were on the U.S. endangered species list, but they've been taken off in various states, and now they're being hunted again. Now, to a certain extent, adding a species to the endangered species list should be evaluated from year to year, and it should be a process where you can say, okay, well, we've protected them for a certain amount of time, and now, you know, they can come off again. But that needs to be a scientific decision rather than a lobbying decision. And what happens in the United States and what happens with CITES, the convention in you know, international trade in endangered species, is that those organizations are very, very strongly influenced by lobbying influence. And the Safari Club International is very good at this. They're professionals at this. They do this day and night, you know, 24 hours, 365 days a year. They specialize in lobbying to be able to hunt species. Now, in Europe, what we are hoping to do is to have a much more scientific evaluation of the fact that lions are actually in trouble. So throw out all the lobbying by the hunters. Let's have a scientific evaluation, and let's say, okay, lions should not be trophy hunted, because this additive mortality factor to a population that is in freefall decline, you know, down from 200,000 lions 50 years ago to about 25,000 lions now, you shouldn't add another mortality factor that can very easily be removed, because actually what it is trophy hunting, which means sport hunting, which means killing for entertainment. It brings in money to governments. It brings in money to, unfortunately, corrupt governments in Africa and corrupt politicians who would like to see their pockets lined by the trophy hunters, who don't mind handing out bribes left, right, and center to influence people to allow them to continue this activity. And that's why what we are trying to do is to say, all right, that's fine, but no more imports. The import factor is important because that is going to be scientifically evaluated. The export factor by the African countries is going to be evaluated in terms of who earns money. So very few countries in Africa, and I'm glad to say that, for example, Botswana has now set another moratorium on lion hunting. Kenya has always been against trophy hunting. Uganda has stopped trophy hunting in game reserves. So there is a little bit of a movement in African countries to say trophy hunting just doesn't bring in what they say it is going to bring in. It doesn't benefit the communities. It doesn't benefit the species. So therefore, you know, what is much better for us is to have photographic tourism and the income from that.
Can I just add something else here,
sure.
June? Hi, this is Christine again. Is that when you or when somebody goes out to Africa and they kill a trophy lion, which is an adult male lion, you don't just kill one lion, because when you take that lion out of a pride, lions are one of the few cat species that are social. Another adult male will come in to replace that lion that has been shot. Now, when that male comes in, there's going to be a fight between two or three nomad males to take that position, and one may lose its life. But once that male comes into place, the first thing he's going to do is he's going to kill the cubs. Also, maybe a couple of females will fight to protect their cubs, and maybe one of those females loses their life. So what I'm saying here is that in killing one adult male, you are killing a lot more lions. You're also stopping the reproduction. And we haven't touched on another issue, which is the feline immunodeficiency virus, which is feline AIDS. And feline AIDS is rife in lions. Peter can talk to you about that. But that affects the reproduction capabilities of the females. So they're already finding it difficult to reproduce. You're taking away the adult males, you're having cubs killed. This is all happening through trophy hunting. It has to stop, and it has to stop now.
Now, Peter, can you quickly talk about what the female population is experiencing? I know that it's a very big topic, but we're actually reaching the end of our program. Can you talk about how it first came about and where the disease is at this point? How many lions have been affected?
Well, June, I think, you know, it sort of comes back to the influence of humans on lion populations. You know, you said it earlier in the show that lions are always seen as, you know, very strong, courageous, invincible animals. I mean, they are probably the most incredible predator in the world. They're not the largest predator. I mean, you know, you've got polar bears, and I should say that there are fewer lions than polar bears left. But there are much larger predators in the world. But because lions live in prides, they are absolutely the most incredible predator in the world. However, they are very, very vulnerable because their immune systems are being destroyed by this feline immunodeficiency virus that something like 95% of all adults have. And they are very vulnerable to diseases such as canine distemper, which comes from domestic dogs, bovine tuberculosis, which comes from domestic cattle. So again, humans are having a very strong impact on lion populations by introducing diseases that are new to lions and that their immune systems can't cope with. So in terms of a species, not only do you have humans killing them because of conflict with livestock and things like that, humans killing them in terms of conflict with indeed human populations, because humans are being killed by lions, but also humans are bringing diseases into lion habitats that strongly affect the lions. In 1994, 1,000 lions died in the Serengeti because of an outbreak of canine distemper virus.
Wow. It's disturbing that these diseases are introduced by humans. And, you know, you have the trophy hunting going on, you have these diseases, and, I mean, what chance do these animals really have? I mean, it seems as though the odds are stacked against them.
Well, and you know, what we decided to do with Lion Aid, I mean, a lot of people have said to us, look, there are so many organizations out there that are concerned about wildlife conservation in Africa and are concerned about lion conservation in Africa. Why do we need yet another organization like Lion Aid that is going to come in and say, well, you know, we need to conserve lions. I mean, lots and lots of people are saying this, but, you know, our point in terms of lion aid is to say, look, these guys, World Wildlife Fund, Panthera, Wildlife Conservation Society, you name them, they have had their chance, right? They have overseen a decline of 90% of lions over the past 50 years. They've been out there, they've been able to see this, but they haven't put effective programs in place that actually conserve lions. Now, what we in Lion Aid want to do is to sort of change the formula. What we are trying to do is we're trying to say, okay, what we need to take out of this formula is trophy hunting. Now, trophy hunting is supported by the World Wildlife Foundation, is supported by the Wildlife Conservation Society, in other words, the Bronx Zoo, is supported by the Panthera Foundation, which is an offshoot of the Wildlife Conservation Society, is supported by a lot of supposed wildlife conservation organizations. Now, we said this is not going to work. Trophy hunting of lions is not going to work, and it's not going to make any positive contribution to the conservation of lions. Therefore, what we said is we need to come to this with a very different sort of attitude and a very considered attitude in terms of actually making a difference in terms of conserving lions. Now, what we need is not only our voices, but we need to have the means to be able to take our voices to Europe, to Brussels, to Strasbourg, where, you know, the European Union meets, to places where politicians meet. I mean, you know, tomorrow we need to get on a train from where we are to go to London and meet with this Minister of Environment. And what we need to be able to achieve all that is to get on that train and to go to Strasbourg and to go to Brussels. And what we need is the finances to be able to do that. We are not an organization that says, look, we've got lots of projects with lions in Africa. The projects don't work. They don't work because we have evidence that they don't work, because they haven't worked for the last 20 years, 30 years, 40 years. What we need is a whole new sort of attitude and a whole new look at what is actually going to work. So what we need is the money as an organization, because Lion Aid is a charitable organization. It depends on donations, and what we need is those donations to be able to make us effective in terms of saying, this is going to work. These are the people that we need to meet. These are the people that we need to talk to. These are the movers and shakers within government that are actually going to do something that is going to cause a stop in the import of lion trophies. Once that happens, we're on a really good track.
Now, Peter, how can our audience get involved with Lion Aid? And do you have any petitions that are going on? And also, can you tell our audience what your website is and also any initiatives that you have going on?
Well, June, what we need is for people to go to our website, www.lionaid.org, very simple, and read what's on there and to press that donate button.
Now, are there any petitions that you are sending out to the public to also help raise awareness?
Yes,
go ahead, Chris.
There is a petition, and it's on the homepage of our website. It's on the left-hand side. They'll see the petition, that they can sign the petition to join the campaign as well.
And
it's all there.
Thank you, Christine. And Christine, can you also give really quickly your Facebook and Twitter information?
Twitter is Lionaid, quite simple, LionAid. And Facebook is facebook.com/Lionaid.
Thank you so much. And Peter and Christine, thank you so much for coming